It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The President and First Lady arrived in Rome, beginning the second overseas trip in his presidency. Friday morning, they met with Pope Francis in Vatican City. The rest of the day includes bilateral meetings in Rome with the Italian president and prime minister, plus a meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. On Saturday and Sunday, the president will attend the G20 summit in Rome. He'll also hold meetings on the sidelines to discuss supply chain resilience, energy prices, the Iran nuclear program, and whatever else world leaders discuss. Then it's on to Glasgow, Scotland, as delegates from nearly 200 nations gather at the UN Climate Summit, also known as COP26. The main goal is to get countries to agree to aggressive emissions cuts and recommit to the 2015 Paris Agreement target of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The Bidens depart Glasgow on Tuesday to return to Washington, D.C. Now, their departure from D.C. was delayed by a few hours as the president made one final visit to Capitol Hill to personally ask House Democrats for their support on both the hard infrastructure bill and the separate human infrastructure bill, now being positioned as the social policy framework. Okay. That part includes funding to mitigate climate change that Biden would have liked to have been able to tout on this trip. Well, despite his detour and Nancy Pelosi's insistence that a Thursday vote would happen on the so-called bipartisan hard infrastructure bill already approved by the Senate, they simply didn't have the votes, as progressives remained insistent that the two bills move together in tandem. Pramila Jayapal chairs the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
We understand that we have come a long way, that this bill has tremendous investments in it that will be transformational, and of course that the majority of the Progressive Caucus priorities are in there. I can say that this was enthusiastically endorsed by everybody in the room.
So the House again temporarily reauthorized the transportation funding, which was set to expire on Sunday. As for what made it into the final pared-down framework, universal pre-K and an improved plan to reduce child care costs, a one-year extension of the child tax credit, and the biggest expansion of affordable health care in a decade, including an expansion of Medicare to include hearing benefits. That means Bernie Sanders' other priorities of dental and vision were cut. The pay-fors include a new tax surcharge on Americans with incomes above $10 million. And, as I mentioned before, this plan also includes the biggest climate investment in U.S. history. $555 billion would go toward cutting carbon emissions, including tax credits for businesses and consumers. After Joe Manchin torpedoed the Clean Energy Performance Program and a fee on methane, Biden's new climate proposal includes a focus on incentives like tax breaks for clean energy and electric vehicles. Combined with federal regulation and state action, that plan could still allow the U.S. to reach Biden's goal of cutting emissions by at least 50% by 2030. All that is great, but so too are the provisions that were removed at the behest of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, including paid family and medical leave, prescription drug pricing reform, a Medicare expansion that would have covered dental and vision, the clean electricity program, free community college, a billionaire's tax. Yeah, you get the idea. Democrats insist that many of these provisions are still on the table, but as of Thursday, they're not in the bill. As Biden pitched Democrats on the new framework, he said, quote, "I don't think it's hyperbole to say that the House and Senate majorities and my presidency will be determined by what happens in the next week." Well, they made huge concessions to save the core of Biden's agenda. What happens in the next week really is up to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Stay tuned. The chief judge of the federal court in Washington, Beryl Howell, criticized the Justice Department on Thursday for what she called a, quote, muddled and almost schizophrenic approach to prosecuting the people who participated in the January 6th uprising. She said they were failing the American people by allowing defendants to take plea deals for minor offenses. She said prosecutors' rhetoric, calling the riot a, quote, attack on democracy unparalleled in American history, did not match their plea offers involving minor charges. She said, quote, no wonder parts of the public are confused about whether what happened on January 6th at the Capitol was simply a petty offense of trespassing with some disorderliness or shocking criminal conduct that represented a grave threat to our democratic norms. And as she sentenced one of the participants, Jack Griffith, to 3 years probation on charges often used for people who disrupt congressional hearings, she said, quote, the rioters were not mere protesters. CEOs of a bunch of big oil companies testified under oath for the first time about the fossil fuel industry's role in spreading climate disinformation at a hearing of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. Top executives from ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, and Royal Dutch Shell were questioned about their decades-long campaign to mislead the public about the role fossil fuels play in global warming. And of course, none of the industry representatives would commit when asked to pledge to no longer direct funds to efforts aimed at obstructing climate initiatives. Breaking news Friday morning out of Illinois, where Congressman Adam Kinzinger, one of only two House Republicans who will admit that the former guy incited the January 6th insurrection, will not run for re-election. Kinzinger was one of 10 House Republicans to vote for impeachment and is one of two Republicans on the committee investigating the attack. Kinzinger's announcement came after Illinois' Democratic-led legislature redrew his district. And finally, the Justice Department reached an $88 million settlement with the families of the 2015 Charleston, South Carolina church shooting victims. The families sued after the FBI disclosed that its background check system failed to prevent the shooter from buying the gun he used in the slayings. His criminal record showed a felony conviction that should have blocked the sale, but the sheriff's office that recorded the arrest didn't show up in the FBI's database. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.